even though you're going to buy, or some of you are thinking of buying Super Program, Wonder Program, it's not going to win the races for you. Now, in this case, I chose to throw out my fifth rated horse, which was Don't Sing the Blues, because of its just absolute dreadful last effort. So I only put four in here. But you'll notice the model at mile and 16th for Hollywood on my play, this is a turf course, is Factor W is the most predictive. The bias is towards sustained. And here I am betting on my number three Factor W horse that is biased early. Number four sustained. And the reason is, I also keep a Brohammer model. And I know that not one horse has won at this distance on this surface with a percent early lower than 49.85. And there was only one of those. Every other winner at a mile 16, there haven't been that many races, but every other one has been over 50% early. And the cluster group is closer to 51%. So I can look at Kant, which is contact gain, and say, this is my number one sustained horse. I will use it in my exact, but I'm going to toss that horse out as a win bet. I don't think that horse can win. Now, it turns out in this case I was right. Grand Fourth. So I bet my key horse in this race is Fable. If I were in Las Vegas and betting a Quinella, that would be the horse that I would key on. Because to me, that horse is the number one W. Even though its balance is wrong, it's still a very strong horse. And if you look at the matchups up above, it matches up very, very well. But my second horse is Boo. Boo-Boo's Buckaroo, and here you see why we tell you to bet two horses. And this would be absolute tragedy to do all this work, get your horse right where you want it, and then not bet it. You don't want to bet one for whatever strange reason you may have. I collected a very nice wind price and a nice exact on it. And that's how I'm using the class value. I'm not making any adjustments with it. I'm simply using it to find contenders. It works in Pleasanton. I got both races down to four horses using the class figures. In both cases, there was a dramatic fall off to the fifth horse, so I didn't need to use it, and it nailed them both. I would suggest this is how you do it, that you keep two figures for yourself. First is your percentage in the top five, and second is the lowest class number that you see winning. For a long time at Santa Anita, I did not see a winner under 1.2, 120 on the class number. That has subsequently not held up real well for me. I now look at anything over 100 pretty much, but you need to establish some kind of parameter. It's very nice to be able to say, well, this horse looks decent enough, but it only has a 77% class, and just toss it out. I warn you, it is only for win. I have not tried this in place. You want to use this as a place horse finder or a place horse eliminator, you're going to have to do your own studies. This is strictly a win method. Now, for those of you who want to make changes, I have printed up before and after sheets for phase three and contender scan on the Apple and Sharp. And we didn't bind them into this, but I'll be glad to give one to anyone who likes it. If you have another computer, you're going to have to either learn the program or talk somebody else into doing it for you. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Does Synergism contain these new class rates?
Yes. Yeah. And from now on, so will Phase 3 and Contender Scan and in any of the other programs. I've just made the program, and I make all the tapes for Dr. Sarton to mail out here, so it'll eventually get onto all the programs. And use it as a tool. It will continue to give you APV. You'll notice I write them both down, because there are times when APV is more valuable. And this is just something you have to sort of develop an instinct for. I would urge
in the
you
place areas where APV is more valuable.
If I would urge you to kind of look at this number, write it down for a month or so, and see how it feels to you. Track it and see how it works with your handicap. Yes, sir.
The new figure, the one that's circled, is it a figure that you can get on a handheld computer, calculator?
Handheld calculator.
Well, he gave you the format.
I put it here. I do the first thing I do when I look at it.
Handheld
calculator.
Yes, it would be a little tedious.
It'd be a little hard.
The formula's there, though.
But the formula's in the phase two manual. It's right here. I've given it to you. It's on page.
Okay.
I didn't actually write it out, but it's on page 25.
Okay.
Would it take
longer to get this figure than it does APV on the handheld calculator?
Yes.
No problem.
Yes, he's talking about the new.
I'll give you the
showing you the old one. To make. Showing you how they had a patient with you.
It's right here.
Yes. I mean,
Dick, is that money matter? Is this new class rating, phase three class rating we just discussed? Is this on this 5502 that I just bought from you?
Yes, it is.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. D or C, I don't remember.
Yeah, okay.
Where's the formula?
Just
slide all the
ratios. It's on page 25.
Everybody's got stage.
Well, okay, it's a word problem today, but it's pretty obvious. That's why I got it.
What say?
Number of in the money percentage. I'll give you the code if you want. For your computer.
Do you have handles?
Right. I'm sorry, you have printed sheets with that? Yes. Yes.
Can you adapt that code to any other computer?
Sure. It's a very trivial change. It really is. And again, don't look at this as salvation, as I'll never have to miss another contender again. You're still going to have to think a little bit. And occasionally I toss out one of my high-rated horses. And occasionally I use, particularly in a tandem situation, if I see a tandem horse that has a very low class number, I'll still use it. You have to think.
Tandem horse, what's that?
Well, we're not talking about that one today. See me at lunch. I don't want to take up the whole time. Okay. Any other questions just about this? All right. I want to leave you with the thought that this is a very automatic system, a very non-thinking system. And when I did the research on it, I made sure that I did no thinking. I just used every horse in the race in a very automatic way, because that's the way to gain statistics. What Jim is going to share with you is probably much more valuable for certainly for making bets and for finding winners. This system of class ranking is, if anything, it does not point to winners, by the way. If anything points to, it's a negative sign to be the top in the race, many times. It does not hand you the winners. But what it will do is get the five, one of the top five is going to win. And I always feel if I can get the winner into my computer, I've got this race. That's always been my biggest challenge. If I can get that winner in there, the methodology is powerful enough to put it on top if I'm keeping my numbers right. The boring stuff is over right now. Thank you very much.
Understand format is in synergism too. I wrote this up here to remind me sometime during the day to show you the center scan format that will be in synergism.
Sure, it's on page 31. You want to discuss it with us, huh?
Does that have the 50% deal too? The synergism has
this is in the this new formula is in synergism. This new formula.
The new class figure is in synergism, and it's now on contender scan and phase three. And this, I'll give anyone a grab out of it that wants to.
Give us the paper for that.
Remind me to. I'm going to erase this now, so it wouldn't meet the whole board. Remind me to put it in later. That was a reminder to remind me. Variance as opposed to the face of the winning horse, right?
Right.
Why is that? Because it's not subject to the vagaries of an individual horse, but actually represents the entire spectrum of the race, position by position, post by post, where the camera catches the horse coming around at each call of the race. Ray Talbot said that the pace of the race, which can be set by as many as three, or if you use a stretch call, four horses, was the class of the race. That determined the class. And therefore, when you do a variant based on the pace of the race, you are doing a variant based on the class of the race. And it should be much more accurate than that which is performed by any given horse, unless it was a wire-to-wire variant. That was the first thing in literature which suggested that time, or some aspect of time, or speed, equated with pace. We kind of stopped there. Others said speed is class, and it stopped there. And then James Quinn came along and was able to qualify horses by the conditions of the race, and the horses that best fit those conditions, and then to classify those horses according to their ability to run against a par. Whether that par is final time par, as a speed handicapper would use it, or whether it's a more ornate par situation with multiple fractions, is dependent upon the person using it. But the concept is that par, because certain horses of certain class distinctions run to certain pars, and the higher the par, the higher the class, if you take thousands of races. That, in essence, then, makes what Quinn is doing very comparable to what we're doing, especially those of you who are using the Brohammer Variant Service, because those are also based on pars over thousands of instances, as opposed to just taking a look at a couple of days of races, relative to class and relating class to their velocity. So don't think that Jim is talking in a speed handicapper's language if he uses final time, because before lunch we're going to take it puristically as he wrote it, and then after lunch we'll try to, Tom will interpolate it to how you use his variance with it, and we'll interpolate several ways in which you can use your pace energy figures and still come up with this masterful advance in the subject of class. How many of you have the book Class of the Field? I just found out we're better book hustlers than we are system hustlers. How many of you read it? How many of you have tried to apply it? I've offended you. How many of you were waiting for this class before you? Yeah, see.
What we were actually laughing at was the identical response we got yesterday.
Yeah. Anybody here tell me where you can get a copy? Yeah. I've been waiting on one for over 3 weeks.
That's something that Jimmy will. James, he doesn't like James. What they call another. Sir James, we'll discuss with you, and we have some suggestions. He can't even get
them. Mitchell sent out a flyer.
Oh yeah, Mitchell, that's the way he's going to suggest.
And it was a discount, so
yeah, we have to have a copy of that.
Get on Dick Mitchell's mailing list, and it.
Half price, $7.95. Without diluting my great buildup of my introduction, I give you that best-selling
I'll talk to you.
And gentlemen of the floor, James
Quinn.
What I do during this part of the presentation is just run through the rating procedure and show you how to get the different numbers using illustration, and not spend too much time on the rationale for the method or the background. I will say that I've always believed that pace and class are highly complementary factors of handicapping, And that the appropriate way, the appropriate relationship between them is the class is very, very useful for identifying the contenders or the horses that are particularly well suited to today's race, and that the pace is a good separation factor, trying to distinguish the horses that suit the race from one another. And I think that's the way the sergeant practitioners use those two factors. So in thinking of how this method of rating horses on class might be used in combination with the methodology, the first thought that comes to mind is that it might be a useful tool for identifying in a very quick way and numerically horses that are suited to today's race, picking those five contenders that make sense today. So that's the frame of reference I want to begin with. In looking at the way class has been used through the years, I've always been highly dissatisfied by the way the ideas associated with class are presented in books and in articles, because I think they tended to either do one of two things. They tended to give a very vague global definition of what class is. The idea, you know, that class is this highly abstract concept that we really can't define, but you know it when you see it. You know, that's a very prevalent comment in the books. And the other side of the coin has been that class is some one aspect of what is really a much more complicated and multidimensional type of factor. Class is speed, or class is pace, or class is earnings, or class is this. These kind of operational definitions of class, which really I think are very, very incomplete, and introduce a lot of error into using the factor and a lot of a lack of understanding of the factor. So in trying to develop a method, I wanted a method that I thought reflected real abilities, a real definition of class, and these abilities were several and didn't include just the quantitative aspects of class, like speed or what I'm calling brilliance in here, which is really a rate of speed or a relatively high rate of speed, but it included some other concepts too, or some other qualities too, which tend to be very, very difficult to quantify. Things like determination and willingness and courage, which I think are real aspects of class and help to distinguish horses on the factor, but are very difficult to quantify and have been quantified very poorly in the past. And practitioners have wound up using methods of class evaluation which really don't serve them very well, and more often than not are more misleading than helpful. So that's where I was coming from, and the idea was that I was going to try to get a measure of class which reflected both brilliance or speed and these competitive qualities, which tend to be highly abstract. And the method that I wound up with is one which tries to take what I consider to be the best advances in modern speed handicapping and adapt that to my own approach of looking at eligibility conditions and picking horses that are well suited to the conditions, and then trying to come to grips with some kind of way of rating these relatively abstract qualities in a way that might be more helpful and misleading. And the method that comes out is on these four pages on this flyer. The key page is page 3. And so in terms of that, you'll see a couple of tables. You'll see a basic definition up the top, but we're looking for a basic class rating that's going to be equal to what I call class and speed points, or speed points earned at a certain class level, multiplied by something called a competitive quality rating, which is a rating that you attach to the competitiveness of a race. It's a judgment that you have to make.
There is one magazine that makes it. Racing
I'm not sure.
No. Intensity of the race, they give it.
They give a judgment like that. Yeah. Well, this is another approach to that kind of thing.
You stole it from Quinn.
I don't think so.
But there's Racing Digest.
Let's talk about the class speed points part of this first, and this is basically looking at how fast horses ran in relation to par, or what the expected times would be at a given level of opposition. And looking at these tables, down the left-hand side, you see the various class levels that I've identified. Some of them are clustered, like the allowance non-winners 3 times and the allowance non-winners 4 times. Some of the stakes races are clustered. And across the top, you see these designations, par plus or minus 1, par plus 2, plus 4, par plus 5, par minus 2, minus 4, par minus 5. These are adjusted times that reflect how fast the winner of a particular race ran in relation to par, or the expected times for that race. In the cells in the middle, you just see a lot of numbers ranging anywhere from 2 to 100, or 2 to 20, actually, the way it's laid out here. This is a 100-point rating system that I just developed. I wanted to use a 100-point system because I thought it was easy to work with those kind of numbers. The basic idea of distributing the points to the class levels based on times around par was that the numbers should reflect both class within a class, and it should reflect class differences between the levels. So for example, if you look at the column that says par plus or minus 1, and the first kind of horses you're looking at are maiden horses, a horse that runs par plus or minus 1 as a maiden earns 5 class speed points in this little method. The horse that runs slower than par at the next highest class level earns less points than a horse that runs par at the lower level. And to extend that same point of view, any maiden, for example, who runs an adjusted time faster than par will earn 6 or 7 points in this method. And you can see that a horse running against non-winners 3 times allowance competition that runs a full second slower than par only earns 5 points. So a maiden, in this little method, a maiden can earn more class speed points than a horse running against non-winners 3 times allowances. So that was the basic idea of the point distribution. Try to reflect both class within a class so that maidens can earn anywhere up to 7 points depending on how fast they run in relation to par, and relative class between the levels. And the point system that you wind up with here is, it's the old story of what I said earlier, this is what worked best during the year and a half when I was tinkering with this and I changed the point allocations many, many times. I want to play Stone talking about these class cars and top ratings on the two far right columns, although they're very important numbers, until we get a little bit further along in the discussion. So I just want to run through very quickly how you come up with 3 basic ratings using this number sequence in front of you, and we'll talk about it and get some reaction from you also. Yesterday we used an example of a $20,000 claiming race run at 6 furlongs. Use this method, you have to know that the par time for that class of horses at that distance is 1:10 and 3. So you have to have a local par chart to use this method. Well, I don't think that's any problem with the group in this room, because you all have local par charts. Believe me, it's a tremendous problem for the great majority of practitioners around the country. They don't really have local par charts, and they need to get them somehow. But in order to use this method, you need your local par. So for the sake of discussion, let's assume that this $20,000 claiming race at 6 furlongs, the expected time, the average time that class runs that distance is 1:10 and 3. On this particular race, the actual final time is 1:11 and 1, let's say. But the track variant that day, the daily variant that day, was slow 3. Which means on average, the races that day will run approximately 3 lengths lower than par. The sprints will run 3 lengths slower than par. So in order to use this method, you not only need the local pars, but you need the daily track variance. These are basic tools that speed handicappers have been using for years. You need to use them to adapt that kind of work to this method. Any question as to what a par is or the daily track variant is?
Yes. You talk about the variant that he actually is a form. You don't do your own.
No, you're doing your own. It's not the variant that is published by the form, which is an entirely different figure related to the track speed records, and is not a very good estimate of true speed, by the way. It's a very misleading estimate.
Who sent you free track variants? What are you talking about? We have them. They're available to you.
See, this group has an advantage because you have pars. They're not stated in fractional times, they're stated much more accurate pars, speed per second. You have a velocity rating that's much more accurate than 1:10 and 3, actually. Much finer estimate of true speed, so you have that advantage. And you have variants that are provided by Tom's service and by some of the computer programs. And a little bit later, Tom's going to show you how to convert the variants distributed by the Sarton group to these kinds of numbers. Postpone that for a little while. But anyhow, you've got this par and you've got the daily variant. The daily variant is slow 3. And what speed handicappers are always working with, of course, are adjusted times, not raw times. The adjusted time in this case would be 1:10:03. Does everyone follow that? Anyone not follow that? Okay. Quick word on the variant, because there's a lot of controversy about the variant, and different arguments are advanced in different books and in different seminars as to how important really is the variant. And to me, you know, the clear answer to that argument is that on many days the variant is relatively unimportant, and on many other days the variant is tremendously important. And if you don't have it, you know, you're at the same disadvantage that everyone else is at that doesn't have it, is just looking at the raw times and the daily racing score. But the variant is important in any, you know, in any kind of overall sense. The variant is tremendously important because just look in this situation, you've got a final time of 1:11:01, and you've got some indication that the track is about 3 lengths slower than normal that day. And to adjust that, you're going to add back the 2 lengths that the horse lost just because the track was slow that day. That's why I ran 1:11:01. In this particular case, this adjusted time becomes par again, 1:10:03. So in order to use this, you need pars, variance, and the adjusted time. And across the column headings here, when it says par plus or minus 1, that's the adjusted time that it's referring to, not the actual time, just from the results chart. Once you have this number, this adjusted time, all you have to do is go to the table. Well, you have to compare it with par. In this case, they're the same. So you go to the column that says par plus or minus 1, and you look for the number of class and speed points that are allocated to that performance. What is it? The $20,000 claim horse there in table 3.
5.
Okay, it's 5. So this horse earned 5 class and speed points for this particular race. So now we've rated the horse on the brilliance factor or the speed factor in relation to the level of opposition, the class that it occurred in. There's one other rating that's important in the method, and that is we want to look at the race as a whole, and we want to ask ourselves how competitive was this race based on what we know about a normal range of the competitive quality of races. And what I've done in this case, I've just used a rating scale that has 5 points. Researchers are always using rating scales to measure qualitative traits or qualities. It's a very standard procedure in social science research. So why not use it in handicapping? The basic presupposition in using these scales is simply that whatever the quality is that you're rating has to be what they call normally distributed. Distributed in a typical pattern, so that if you ran 1,000 races, for example, you know, you would predict that X number of races would fall at this point on the scale, and a much, much smaller proportion of the races would fall on one extreme of the scale, and still a similar smaller proportion would fall on the other extreme of the scale. So I have to ask myself, is this quality called degree of competitiveness of races, is it distributed in a very typical pattern, or is it really skewed in some way so that most races are non-competitive and most races are highly competitive? Well, experience and a lot of other data that we have suggest very strongly that races are distributed in a very normal pattern. Most races are typical in the sense that they're competitive in a certain way. A challenge early and a challenge late, which doesn't persist for very long, and rarely lasts for more than a 1/16 of a mile, is the norm. And most races cluster around there. At one extreme, we have races that are what you would call non-competitive. There's not much competitiveness at all required to win those races. In the wire-to-wire case, all that's required really is speed. In other cases, there's just mild resistance, not much of a challenge. It lasts for a fleeting couple of seconds, and you would consider the race to be mildly competitive. And in other races, there are repeated, prolonged, serious challenges, which require a much greater expression of these qualities of class that I'm saying are abstract and difficult to measure. So you can start rating these races. And the scale I'm using is from 1 to 5. And at one pole of the scale, the low end, a race that is considered non-competitive, and we can say more about what that means, would get a 1. A race that is typically competitive or seems to be a normal kind of a race on this factor called degree of competitiveness gets a 3. And a race that's considered highly competitive gets a 5. And of course, there are 2 points, intermediate points, 2 and 4. When you're using a scale like this, there is a subjective factor involved. And there are ways of trying to control for that objective factor. Usually the way it's done is that a group of people in this room would all be considered raters. And we would show you a large sample of races, let's say 100 races, and each of you would be required to rate that race from 1 to 5 on these factors. And then we would look to see, you know, what kind of a correlation we got among your ratings, and we expect it to be relatively high. And if it turned out to be relatively high, we'd say, well, you know, in using this kind of procedure to rate races on this factor called competitiveness, the inter-rater reliability, the consistency among the raters, is pretty high. Let's say it's 0.60, which would be very high, by the way. In another case, it might be very, very low. We might find that some of you are rating a race 2, and others are rating it 4.